This is a session on men's issues, the second in a series of four, perhaps five. My name is Ray McKeever. I'm the teacher in this class. You can start the tape now. Thank you. I already did a little while ago. So this previous conversation was on tape. Okay, I've decided today I'm not going to be a teacher. Last time we, so you can do whatever you want. I'm not going to discipline anybody here or whatever else teachers, and nobody can get brownie points for any reason whatsoever. There's no way to get an A in the class. I just want to say one thing left over from last time. Bill, do you wish to make further contact with Bob? Okay, you two in the exercise that we're going to do first now, you two get to be partners, okay, in the opening exercise.
Is positive behavior reinforcement.
Mm-hmm. No. Oh, no. See, I take that as a sign that the two of you really subliminally would like to make contact, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that. It's only certain things like, well, you know, that stand in the way. Gosh, maybe we should forget about last time and just move on to this time. But something was going around in my head. Remember last time we talked quite a bit about oppression, actually, and how oppression works. One of the things that we talked about is how when some force comes up from below, the oppressed come up and ask for change, it creates a tension in the system that's been developed. And I think the specific thing we talked about that was women coming into the workforce now and how that's putting a strain on the system because there aren't enough jobs and men are feeling pushed out and so forth. What it reminded me of, we didn't talk about solutions to that, and I don't know if we'll do a lot of that in this class particularly. It's just more to raising issues, I think. And, but I remembered one thing that Matthew Fox said when he was talking about the 10 reasons for developing a creation-centered spirituality, and the first one had to do with a global crisis, and he talked about unemployment as one of the crises, if you remember that. And what he said then is he kind of renamed that and said it's not unemployment, it's misemployment that's the problem. And I really identified with that strongly as an artist who feels like I kind of, I heard you talking about Asher Lev yesterday too, and I really have to kind of almost beg society to affirm what I'm doing and not be threatened by it. But it reminded me of how much the things that he suggests for new types of employment, you know, artist kind of work, clowning, painting, singing, just if 15% of the population was hired to lift up culture and joy and hope and kind of collective activity like that, creativity, what that would be like. And I thought, I don't think this culture would stand for that. One of the reasons is just because of this whole masculine-feminine thing. That kind of behavior is very feminine. It's very kind of open and free. It's not rigid, that creativity. So I don't know, it was going around in my mind and I wanted to say that. It's just a further example of how any attempts to feminize culture really get squelched, or we don't even think of them as alternative solutions to some problems that get created.
I have to bring this up. Don't you remember or tell you that during the Depression, artists and all kinds of artists were hired by the government to paint murals and paint pictures and do sculpture?
As a way of, you know that.
One of Roosevelt's things.
Of FDR's things.
You still see them in old post offices.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not particularly that it never happens. I think it probably does happen, but then it gets squelched in some ways when it starts to get too.
All our things have been slashed.
Right.
You know, the schools, they cut out these classes and that class. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd like to start off today by just doing a little connecting exercise, and so I'd like to have you choose a partner and sit by your partner. And Bob and Bill, partners.
Okay.
Why don't you do it, if actually, if you can't, why don't you do it with somebody of the same sex? Since we're talking about sexism, about. So I think.
Of
the same, same gender. Maybe you should do it to Reed. I'll opt out of this one. Of you two, yeah. No, it's very simple. It's not going to take very long. Oh, goodness, you're way over there.
Come on over here.
Two chairs.
There you go. Now face each other, okay? Find a way to face each other. I'm just going to tell you a line of a song. I've written quite a few songs around about men's issues. One of the songs that I've written is called Brother Song. And I'll just say, I'll say the lines from it. Why don't you take each other's hands? We'll just sort of leap right past all these things. And here are the lines from the song that I'd like to share with you. You can look at each other, I guess, not me. I'm going to go ahead and just leave it in the language of brother, okay? And hope that that's not offensive to those of you who are women looking at each other. Brother, I've been waiting for the moment when we will see past all that keeps us far apart. The distances we'll travel on that journey through our soul will make us whole and give us all a heart. Brother, I've been looking my whole life long to find myself. The man in you is what I seek in time. The more you let me see of you, the more I see of me. I am yours, brother. You are mine. Let's just take a minute to go ahead and look into each other in whatever way that feels comfortable for you. And even if it doesn't feel totally comfortable in the way that you're doing it, just let yourself know that and stay with it. But try to do it non-verbally, I think.
Dream about you tonight.
Just stay in your room. Okay, stay with each other. I'm going to read a poem by David Steinberg here that's called Among Refugees. Oh, brothers and sisters, where can we go if we are afraid of each other? Where can we grow if we cannot look each other in the eyes? The air is molasses today. Even the cirrus wisps lose their dance. I feel my shoulders creak, my back curve. We are all pilgrims. We are all children. We are all immigrants from a dying land. We do what we can when we can, knowing it will never be enough. Now, here comes the hard part, all these notes. A few years ago, somebody came up to me and handed me a card that kind of struck. The message on the card struck me where I was at the time and where I think a lot of men find themselves in this day and age. On one side of the card it said, "Men are hopeless, right?" And on the other side of the card it said, "Wrong. Men are changing." I thought, well, I don't know. There's a part of me that feels very hopeless about change and how solutions are going to be found to this problem called sexism and the relationship between men and women in the world. And there's a part of me that feels hopeless individually about that for a lot of the reasons that we talked about before, because I feel a real part of the problem. As a result, carry sometimes guilt and powerlessness and helplessness around. So I like the idea that men are changing. That's hopeful for me. men have always been changing, of course, so it's not as simple as men are changing. But men, I guess the two words that I like to play around with words and letters and words, you know, things like that. So the two words that look the same to me are charge and change. We've got an R there in one of them and an N in the other one. men have been in charge of change. And I think that's what it means in some ways, a simple definition of what it means to live in a patriarchal culture. Men are in charge of setting what reality is, what the symbols of reality are, what the models of things are that inform who we are as people. I think one of the things that men have to do is let go of taking charge of change, and I think that's very hard to do. So I would just say that. There's a couple of other words that I think would be nice to just kind of lay over what I want to present and maybe what we talk about today, and that's the words hard and soft. You hear a lot about strong and weak as being labels that, like, the male is strong and the female is weak. I don't know. I'm looking for new words, and two words that I find helpful at the moment are the male is hard, the female is soft, or masculine means hard, feminine means soft. I don't like the split particularly, but I think it's helpful to just have those terms in our minds, because I think that's what is true in our culture, that there is that split. We live in a split, divided kind of culture that looks at things in kind of dualities and whatnot. How many of you got a chance to read the Bly article, or some of it at least, the Robert Bly article on what men really want? Bly talks about, just to refresh us all and say very simply, Bly talks about hard men becoming softer. The change from masculinity, the male image of the 50s, I think he talks about, to the male image of the 70s, is kind of a change from hard to soft, to put it simply. In other words, getting in touch with the feminine side. But he says that, just a minute, I just got to check all these notes. I hate when it's kind of note stuff. But I feel like I need to say all this somehow. Okay, I guess what he points out, and also what Mark Gerzon points out in his book about the choice of heroes, is that although men may be doing that as a response to women who are saying, listen, you've got to change, men do it for two reasons. They do that to kind of please the women, to make things more compatible. And the second reason is so we can enjoy ourselves more. There is something advantageous to adding more parts of ourselves to ourselves, and we talked about that last time. But I guess what both Bly and Gerzon say that is real to me is that just to take another image of who we can be and try to be that image really kind of leaves us nowhere in terms of really knowing who we are. So maybe I just read some of the things I got here, and then I'll have to try to figure out how to say it another way. Both Bly and Gerzon expose the danger of living according to the image, rather than according to some notion of the authentic self. The image is a projected model that one tries to be like, okay? And in some ways, that's not totally a bad thing, it seems like, because we learn from emulating others, we learn from seeing how people live in the world, You know, we just don't learn in a void. We're creatures like other creatures. The more you let me see of you, the more I see of me. That kind of thing. But there's a problem in taking an image and having an image, projecting it out there, and then trying to be like that. And I think that's both what they're saying, is that we have a tendency to do that, particularly in this culture. I think most of us know that in terms of the in terms of what we call the macho image. Man is a certain way, and we try to be that. I think those of us, and I think I can talk pretty safely in this community about those of us who are sensitive and who are trying to move toward another image, often get into the danger of the other one. We project the image of the liberated male, and we try to be that. And it's, like I said, it's good in some ways, and we can see the advantage of this, but it still leaves us a bit hollow. As Bly says, we become kind of life, what does he say, life preserving? Do you remember what he says? Life protecting or life preserving or something, but we don't become life giving people. We sort of lose that courage to assert ourselves, men. Life preserving, is that what it says?
Yeah, males are life preserving, but not exactly life giving. There's not much energy in them. Many are unhappy.
Many are unhappy, right. Kind of caught in a no person land there. Another couple of words that I like, he uses the word that we become receptive. I think men are becoming more receptive. But we're not figuring out how to be responsive. I think of the example we had the other day. It sticks in my mind, perhaps because it was so sexual. But your example about somebody looking in at the window to you, or Gertrude's statement about how women are supposed to sit a certain way, because if they sit another way, the men are looking at them and think what it's doing to those men. Well, men have always been receptive. we see those things. We take things in. Liberated men are learning to be more receptive to women's concerns for their own rights, to women both economically and, I think, for women's invitation for men to be more feeling, more open. And we are receptive to those things. But it seems like there's a difference between receptive and responsive to me. Maybe we can talk more about that.
When you talk about that difference, do you mean you're kind of moving halfway there? You're receptive to the idea, you're thinking about it, but you can't really put it into action?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example. I should have written an example.
But you're not saying either that all men are like this man in Susan's life.
No. No, I go for some pretty wild examples. But, well, that's a good point, though. In a sense, you know, there is, to a receptive, to be just receptive and not responsive is to be voyeuristic in a way. We watch the world, we see how it works, we kind of have a distance on it.
But there is a difference.
Yeah, but I'm going to go ahead and draw the point that sometimes I feel that way as a man, that I'm watching the world, I'm seeing how things go, I'm trying to figure out a response to it, maybe. But I'm more, the world is more objective than subjective. What am I driving at? I think that men, this is a really overstatement, but I think men have trouble knowing how to respond to things. I'm not sure we're in touch enough with our authentic self to feel spontaneous, to have something happen and to respond to it. I just think that's a men's issue. I'm not saying that anywhere near the clarity that I would like to say it, but there's something in there for me. Maybe we can get at it as we go along here. I think it's easier for, here we go. I think it's easier, when I think about how to be liberated, it feels easier for me to go into my room alone and think about the image of what I want to be based on what I've seen and so forth, then come out of my bedroom and try to be that. Than it feels for me to sit down in a group of men or a group of women and just work it out there by getting maybe feedback from other people. You know what I mean? That's painful to me. And the other one seems more the way I've been conditioned to do it. I'll just read a little bit more. Robert Bly said, it's not just a matter of adding the feminine side to the old masculine. We must explore the deeper levels of our maleness or our masculinity. And he suggests that we go at this through this character of Iron John, making friends with a wild man, making friends with the deeper masculine, that we've been living an old masculine image. Our liberation, or the key to being alive in the world again, is to go toward the feminine. He talks about it in terms of getting the key from under your mother's pillow to let the wild man out. And that's how a lot of us are going, is trying to be in touch with our feminine. Then he's saying, once you let the wild man out, you've got to deal with the wild man. We can talk about that too. Gerson would say, being liberated or free is not just a matter of putting forth a new image and being it. In other words, simply denying that old image that we've been living by and being the new one. But we must explore why the old images have been with us for so long. We must be conscious of what these old images are, and why they are, why they work, why they've been useful, maybe why they're not now. I guess I would ask if any of the men know what it feels like, if any of the men here, I mean, maybe I'm the only one. I feel like I'm the only one. And it's not that I'm not open to some critique of this thing, because I think the point that you raise is a very good one. What is the difference? And some of the critique of this article is that it just sounds like the same old thing in another form. You know, here's an excuse for men to be disrespectful and dominant and so forth again. But what I identify with in the article is the part of me that does still feel locked up. There's a part of me that feels unsexual. There's a part of me that feels like, because I've been told that I shouldn't be aggressive, that I can't be assertive. So I go to a gathering of some sort, and I've got things to say, but I don't say them because I want to give other people room. And it's particular when I go to things where there's women present.
I think that verges on one of the reasons why I haven't bought into this whole idea of oppression. You know, up to now, we've kind of assumed that men have been the oppressive factor in this relationship, and I don't think that's necessarily true. There have been inequalities as we've gone along, but things have changed on both sides, and just as there have been factors that we've talked about with women, so have there been oppressed factors for men. And to label that oppressive, I think, is just kind of a convenient write-off, I think. And I don't know, with Nelson and embodiment, that, you know, when he started talking about androgyny and empathetic identification, I really think that's where, that's got to be our direction to to try to look into each other and really see what those needs are. I kind of look at the women's liberation as it's just a kind of a crying out for recognition. For so many years, women have been nurturing children, and it's been a thankless job for them. There's been no recognition, and I think that finally that need for recognition burst out and put us into the situation that we're now in. I think that men have to get their feelings to a position where they can express themselves and give this recognition that's due. And I think that that's something that right now we're very resistant to and really don't know how to deal with.
Well, I think the last thing you said there was, I think what I'm trying to get at is, I feel like that too. I feel like I want to get someplace, but I don't know how to get there. And I don't even know where it is I should be going exactly. But it feels like something's wrong. Something's not quite right. Any responses?
In what sense do you mean that you feel something wrong? In the way that you relate to people, or what you've chosen as, say, your life's work, or how are you gonna spend your time? Is there anything specific you think of when you say that?
Well, it was somewhat along the area? Yeah, somewhat along the line of what Reed was saying. I'm trying to think of where I've got my message that something's wrong. It seems like I get it mostly from women.
I think one of the confusing factors is that I'm being held responsible for the men that came before me. And I think there's a lot of, right now anyways, a lot of bitterness or resentment with those men, because of what the past situation is becoming regarded as. Mm-hmm. And that puts me into jeopardy when I really shouldn't be. I should be open-minded and I should be able to deal on a different level. And yet, I'm being prejudiced against and resented because of those that came.
So you only got two strikes against you right away. First of all, the influence of those that came before you. Second of all, the criticism of people who are saying you should be different than they are.
Yes, I guess you got to step out of the batter's box and take a deep breath or something.
Right. So we're facing the last pitch. Well, let me just play a little song here, okay, to maybe focus this issue a little bit. This is a song by a man named Jeff Morgan called Goodbye John Wayne. And I think it might hit at something of what we're talking about here. Just listen to the words and then maybe we could respond to it.
Shy, winning smile, not good with words. At home with the sky, or a stampeding herd. Bigger than life, no one could tame. Goodbye, John Wayne. I watched a man you projected on screen, and I tried to live up to that image I'd seen. A soul of warm stone, you never complain. Goodbye, John Wayne. Well, you saved the day and won everything. right, but not even you could live up to your name. Goodbye, John Wayne. Henry knew you'd make it, even when you looked tired. The way you handled love, oh, I used to admire, but it only brought me confusion and pain. Goodbye, John Wayne. Yes, you had some strength, and that I can use, but you never tried to let anyone through. And I can't live behind walls with my feelings in chains. Goodbye, John Wayne. And you saved the day, you won every fight. Yes, your record was clean. You always were right, but not even you could live up to your name. Goodbye, John Wayne.
There's another spot in Gerzon's book later on. He's talking about politics. After he's talked about the male as the image of the frontiersman and the soldier, he reflects on certain other areas. And I was struck by the beginning of this. It's not only sort of being shaped by this old image that we're trying to let go of in some ways, but and now it seems like in our country there's a kind of a reversion back to this image according to this. By the beginning of the 80s, America was engaged in a sexual civil war, not between men and women, but among men themselves. A new word had entered the debate over foreign policy, macho. While the Reagan administration called its opponents soft, the administration's critics called it macho. In early 79, Richard Reeves had observed a rise of a macho coalition, a national reassertion of toughness that would settle for nothing less than a full-scale preparation for war. Evoking this country's frustration following the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and the hostage-taking in Iran, Reeves wrote, "When America was America, it wasn't pushed around. Are we going to act like men? Fight, that's where the new macho talk may be leading us." Fearing that we were losing control over the world, Americans rejected the soft peanut farmer and elected the hard cowboy. Voters were more ready to exorcise the ghost of Vietnam and replace it with a new posture of American assertiveness. Reagan played his role to perfection. His hideaway was not a farm like Carter's or a beach house like Nixon's, but a ranch. Every conflict became a test of our national resolve. Vietnam was not a tragic mistake, much less a failure, but a war that the American soldier was denied permission to win. When he met with Mexico's President Lopez Portillo, he gave a rifle as a gift. The Reagan administration presented an energetic attempt to return to the John Wayne thing.
That's why he cuts brush on his ranch so cold.
Any other responses to the John Wayne song?
Ray, can I comment?
Sure, oh yeah.
Before you put the song, you talked about there's something that you felt was wrong and at least in yourself, and that you were getting in touch with or something, and you felt that coming, you got that message from women. You know what I'm talking about?
I think what the clarification you make is I'm not sure that I feel like something is wrong with me, particularly. Uh-huh. I feel like something's wrong. I see it more kind of from a justice and a societal perspective. It goes into me, though, in what I can do about it, or how I'm to act or respond to it.
The comment I was going to make is that I too get the feeling something's wrong from women, and the women's liberation is an indicator of that. But I also get it from not necessarily individual men, but from male stereotypes and then the image concept that you're talking about. There's all the male images that maybe generally here that society gives us, I think, are lacking in the sense that they're not touching into part of the basic humanness that every human, male or female, is. And it's tapping all these masculine traits, quote unquote, but it's denying some of the what are considered feminine traits that males do have. And that's that image, they're setting out this image for males to be, and I think it's, at least for myself, it's false because it's lacking in just some basic human nature things, like the compassion, patience, meekness. I suppose if you wanted an example, Jesus would be a good example. You know, some of the feminine characteristics that he encompassed, you know, are the ones that are lacking in the male stereotypes today. At least that's the message. That's where I get from women, and then that male stereotype.
I wonder if there's so much missing as if they're just so far suppressed. And I feel like that, you know, when you go out in the public, that you got to put up this defense and play into the stereotype or whatever. The more you do that, the farther suppressed those feelings get and the harder they are to bring back out.
Sometimes wonder though, and I am only asking this, you know, is there a part of being man that really wants to be John Wayne, the good part of what John Wayne projected? You know, the guy that's out on the range, the guy that can handle his life, he's just got it, you know, and I don't see that's a negative kind of thing. I'm wondering if there isn't something that men feel.
Well, sort of, yeah. Let's put down the titles of these areas that Gurzon looks at. The five kind of the five kind of archetypal or whatever images, really cultural images, and I think there are positive and useful aspects to each one. Maybe we could just talk about those, or you could use those to talk more about what you're saying. The frontiersman, the soldier, the breadwinner, the expert, and the lord. And I'll put over here what the image is related to. The land, the body, family, knowledge, and the soul. Anybody see anything wrong? I'm trying to soften up at the moment. This kind of discussion kills me because it never goes where I want it to do, and I start. When we start talking about this stuff, I for some reason, I always have to go through a stage of feeling hard. I do. I feel very hard as we're talking about this, and I hate it. But for some reason, I get into that. So no, that's right. Maybe we should all take 5 minutes to be silly. Jeff has a wonderful song in here called "I Want to Be Silly, Take It All Willy-Nilly." I want to lose control and just let me go and take it the way it falls. Well, let's talk a little bit about the frontiersman then, okay? Can we go ahead and talk a little bit about the frontiersman? Because I think there are some incredibly positive images in that. I love to be the frontiersman. I mean, it's wonderful to go camping in the boundary waters by myself and the image, well, do others know that kind of feeling of the frontier, the places, the exploration, the being out there, the kind of no obligations, Holden Village. I mean, we're all pioneers in some way, or at least we can feel like pioneers here. That's, for me, that's the negative. I mean, the wonderful part of the image is the kind of exploring the new spaces image. And God knows we need to keep discovering things and so forth. The negative part of the image to me is that you never stay with what is. There's no connection. There's no relationship. One of the nice things he talks about here is we talk about how the land, we talk about the land as female. You know, the earth is a she, Mother Earth, the kind of thing. He talks, he says that, he uses the words son or suitor. I think it's him that uses that. You know, are we the earth's sons? Are men the earth's sons? Dependent on the earth, working out that kind of relationship, or are we the earth's suitors? You know, do we come and try to woo the earth to marry us or to be what we want? Well, then talks about some statements about how we don't even do a good job of our wooing. You know, we come up, we kind of flirt and we have an affair and then we move on. That, so there's that kind of lack of willingness to make a connection, to make a commitment. I think it's the hard thing about the frontiers image.
I just remembered an experience. I have some relatives that I didn't know until I was an adult who settled in Montana. My grandmother's brother. They came together. He went to Montana. They're all ranchers. And I, as a young adult, went there and spent some time with them. And I guess there was a sense of, from that was the first time that I ever had been really in touch with people who lived and loved the land. And I didn't get the John, the negative part of the John Range, the person who couldn't share his feelings about the land from him. Rather, it was so exciting to meet men who loved what they did. You know, who just, who looked at the land, rode out, you know, they drove their cars over the, through the fields, like that, you know, and it really got into it, and yet did not project the other part of that, which is we're real tough, and they're very soft, and they were very soft men. I remember that talking about. I guess that's how I would make that connection.
Right.
But they were able to really express how important it was for them to have that kind of space, freedom.
To me, I thought of the hard and soft dichotomy again. To me, and there's a line in the song there about a soul of warm stone. That just hits me every time. It's in some ways it's got to be beyond hard and soft, and that's what I see in the image of the frontiers person is what's get missing. Well, you can be hard about it, you can be soft about it. I felt the softness there. But for me, what gets missing there is the element of connection with it, the willingness to connect and not dominate, not conquer, or not feeling like you're. You know, it's more of a feeling maybe or something, but I know that feeling that comes up in my relationships.
The rugged individualism, I think, is a myth in the way we usually think of myths. There's a lot of falsehood in that as far as the way of life that really was. I mean, at harvest time, or roundup time, or house building time, or anything, it was generally, you know, neighbors for miles around that would come together to do that stuff. And then, right, there are very, very few people who, in fact, would go out and build their own house. A few of those people.
But what you say reminds me that, in a sense, even what you were talking about is not the frontiersman. That's not a frontiersman. You're talking about farmers, homesteaders, things like this. We're talking, this is the frontiersman, the one who doesn't stay, who always moves on. The camel man who's up on the top of this rock somewhere in nowhere with his motorcycle smoking a camel's. You never ask how he got there. You never ask, I mean, but there's an image of this freedom. You never ask who he goes back to. It doesn't feel like he goes back to anybody. There's just not a connection.
I don't know if this fits in here, but before I lose this remarkable insight.
Anything fits in here, man, I'll tell you.
At some point, I'd like us
struggling for insight.
To think together about today's heroes. I was trying to think of John Wayne as not a hero.
You know, what you say, though, reminds me not only of who our heroes are, and we're having maybe a hard time. We don't label them as easily as we used to. I mean, even 20 years ago, there were certain stars in baseball who's, I don't know, they were heroes or whatever, and now it's things like salaries and the fact that they're getting traded all the time and so forth. So it's not only who the heroes are, but what our relationship with the heroes are, how they're our heroes. And my guess is that in some ways these are all heroes, or the image of these are kind of all heroes. And Gerzon talks about how in some ways these are all very useful things. I'll just read them real quickly, but they're useful because from what we said about the frontiers person, is somebody who explores new lands. The soldier is someone who protects loved ones at great risk, you know, at great risk.
His body.
Just a minute. The breadwinner is someone who fosters economic prosperity. The expert is someone who marshals new knowledge, you know. Again, it's kind of an exploratory thing. And the Lord is someone who offers salvation, immortality. He espouses that kind of stuff and keeps it coming. And so, in some sense, they're all very useful. And he also talks about how in the earlier days, before we had things like TV and packaged images, our images were right next to us. We worked next to them. We grew up next to them. We, you know, in some sense, did become like them. And now, we're so estranged from our images, because most of them are packaged, asked to be consumed, and they change so fast that, that I don't know, we could go through and look at the whole list of these and how these are just not useful models for us anymore, and yet they kind of keep being lifted up on TV programs.
I think the frontiers is something I've felt at times, if I'm reading that correctly. I'm thinking of when I traveled in Europe a couple summers ago, and I traveled by myself for 5 weeks. And I really felt a tremendous satisfaction at going places new constantly, being on the move constantly, mm-hmm. only being in one place for 2 days at a time. And so everything that I did, I had to figure out where I was going to go, when I was going to go, what I was going to see. And to me, there was a tremendous satisfaction of doing that, a sense of exploring, a sense of always doing something, a sense of pushing, always not sitting back and doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe part of that came out of the frustration I was having in my job, too. I felt dead in that job. There was no sense of satisfaction. I think this was really the opposite for me. I felt very satisfied. At the same time, what you said about there are serious drawbacks too. That when you're on the move constantly, if you're not in any one place for long, if you don't form relationships, there is a loneliness to that kind. But too, it was real difficult. In a way, it was difficult too. There was satisfaction, but there was loneliness, and there's kind of deprivation at the same time. It was a strange kind of thing. Good and bad, both.
I think the intention is not to take away the satisfaction of one, it's just not to lose the satisfaction of the other, because this is the way to be a real man or something. Yeah. Daniel Boone. who somehow had to give up the other in order to do that. It's like the soldier. What the soldier has to give up in order to protect and always be ready to protect. In other words, you talk about military training. You kind of have the old message that our basic attitude toward people is to be compassionate, warm, caring, loving, cooperative. You have that drummed out of you so you can be an expert on killing to protect or something like that. So your body becomes a machine that will respond that way, and to do that you have to deny the other feelings. You have to basically deny this other stuff. And then the tough part about that gets to be that if you, not only as a soldier, but if you operate as a soldier in public, you have to deny certain feelings in order to get ahead in the business world, in order to win, in order to do that kind of stuff. You operate that way in public. Then in private, you're supposed to come home and be very loving, compassionate, and cooperative, and caring with your children and your wife, and you know what I mean? It's sort of there is satisfaction in the other, in a way. We need to be protected. In a way, it's not saying that having people to protect us is wrong. It's just the price we pay for damage.